Chapter 30, The World Championships. Waking up, it felt like any other day. My body was still noticeably overtrained, but it had gotten a bit better. I took a shower in the little bathroom installed in Chris's garage gym, packed my bag, and we drove off to the pyramid-shaped building of Long Beach University. We arrived just 45 minutes before my division was scheduled to start, and I was in a bit of a hurry to get changed and warmed up. It was a grand venue for a jiu-jitsu competition. 12 mats took up most of the floor space. Matches with grunting, sweaty, and heavy-breathing guys and girls were on. Some raised their arms in victory, others sat with their faces in the palms of their hands, crying from defeat and broken dreams. The span of emotions that were there on those mats was fascinating. It was surreal to think that I would be in there, a part of the spectacle and theater, in only a matter of minutes. I didn't feel like I belonged. Everyone seemed so focused. They all wanted to become world champions. I was just there, passing by, just making another step on my journey. There were thousands of spectators, many crammed into the lowest row of seats, trying to get close to the mats. One guy right next to me shouted as loud as he could to his friend on the mat. It was chaotic, and I tried to find a place that was a little more peaceful for my warm-up, while at the same time still being close enough to make sure I could hear when my name got called. Søren had flown down from San Francisco for the weekend just to see me compete. It was nice to have him there with me. I asked him to help me get some fruit and water while changing into the gi I had borrowed from Chris. My own lightweight gis would not be permitted for the competition because of the fabric, except for the white pants that were made of cotton. Unaffiliated. Chris had made a stencil over the back of his gi top. The message fit me perfectly. The training I had done up to this competition was with everyone everywhere in the world. I represented no one and everyone. I put on my hoodie over the gi top and plugged my earphones in. I didn't have much music on my phone, but what I had reminded me of all the things I'd experienced on my trip. I was going to try and put all of them together and boil them down to 8 minutes of intense rolling. I tried to break a sweat, but every few minutes someone recognized me from the block. Two of them were Africans who had traveled all the way from Angola for the competition. It sounded like a long way, but on the other hand, I probably took the prize for the longest trip to get to the event that day. I wish I had included Africa in my itinerary, but apart from Angola and Morocco, it had been too hard to find enough places to train there. I'll do an African jiu-jitsu safari another time. My division was delayed, and I realized that I had been seeded to the second round. I hadn't looked at the brackets, and I had no idea who my opponent was. There had been no research on Google to figure out his game plan. I didn't care who he was or what he was trying to do. I was just going to try and play my own game, no matter what. And the game was simple. Low on energy, and with the cardio and endurance of an overweight, World of Warcraft-obsessed teenager, I decided that my best bet would be to pull guard and turn the match into a slow-paced, tactical chess game. A half-bald guy with a number 7 on his shirt called me up. I started to warm up and asked Søren to hold my stuff while I was on the mat. I weighed in at 80.3 kilos with the stomach full of food and water, way under the limit for my division. Basically, the only things I had to bring to the table were my technique and experience. Everything else was at an all-time low. The guy with the IBJJF shirt on told me to take a patch off my pants or change them. I had a kawaii kimono patch that I had superglued and sewed on the bottom of my pants. There was no chance I could rip it off, and he only gave me 3 minutes to find another pair. I didn't have any. I had taken the longest detour ever back to the US from Costa Rica to compete that day, and I was about to be disqualified for a patch on my pants. Half an hour earlier, I had talked with 50 different people I knew. Now I couldn't find any one of them as I ran around the stairs in panic looking for someone who could lend me a pair of white pants. Hobson spotted me from far away and came running with his. He's about a head and a half shorter than me, and his pants resemble mostly shorts on me. It was my only chance though. I pulled them down as low as I possibly could and ran back to the checkpoint. The guy who was stressed out checking all the people going through didn't even look at my new shorts as he told me to hurry to match number 7 for my match. I couldn't believe I had just made it through and gave Hobson a thumbs up. He was laughing at me as I tried to make my walk look natural, going around the mats in the super tight and short pants. If that guy at the checkpoint had taken one look at those pants, I would have been disqualified on the spot. The runner was waiting for me at the mat. I was up next. My opponent was already there. His eyes were fixed on the mat. I shook his hand. He didn't say anything. The side of his mouth lifted a little bit into what could have resembled a slight smile, but it was hard to tell. He looked concentrated, and no parts of his face seemed to be moving after the smile attempt. He was shorter than me, but looked to be about double as wide and wearing a Mongolian flag and a big half Gracie patch on his gi. He looked like any other guy I might run into in a gym next week somewhere in the world, I thought to myself. Søren, Hobson and Jonathan were at the sideline right next to me. They looked nervous. I, on the other hand, probably looked like some karate guy who had walked in and signed up for something he didn't know what was. I bowed before I walked onto the mat. I wasn't really big on the bowing stuff, but I knew that little things like that can make a big difference in competition jiu-jitsu, and making a good impression on the referee usually goes a long way. As it always is with these matches, they seem to start much sooner than expected. There is no talking from the referee like in MMA, no backing up to your corner and getting ready. As soon as both guys are on the mat, the referee, usually a lazy and tired Brazilian guy, signals the match to begin right away. Here we go. I tried to find a tiny bit of will to win inside of me. The Mongolian guy looked strong and focused. I, on the other hand, looked like I was on my way to the beach. As soon as the first grip landed, I sat down and started to work my spider guard. I was relaxed and felt comfortable, hanging onto the sleeves of the aggressive giant that was trying to rip my legs off. I took my time and concentrated on my breathing. I knew that my cardio would be the biggest problem in an 8-minute round, so I focused all I had on not gassing while looking for the sweep. In a split second, my feet were in the right position and I broke his balance perfectly with a tripod sweep. He was like a cat that couldn't land on his back and spun around, powerfully scrambling back on top, back in my guard. Judo, I thought to myself as I looked up and saw the referee give me an advantage point. God damn it, I didn't have the energy to scramble against that shit. His grip was strong and every time I grabbed his collar, he broke mine with fury. My fingers snapped as he ripped his own gi out of my hand. I could see his chest muscles flex under the gi whenever he tried to throw my feet to the side and pass my guard. I had to be patient. Every time I tried to sweep, he was steady like a rock. Eventually, the referee gave him a warning point for being stuck in my guard. My game plan worked and he got more and more frustrated. At one point, he almost passed my guard, but my stiff arm side control escape saved me in the last second. I was glad I had practiced it so much on the trip. The referee raised my hand, declaring me the winner. The only thing I could think about was that I was way too exhausted for one more match. I hurried back to the warm-up area and was lying on my back on the floor, soaked in sweat, looking up into the ceiling. My body was so warm, it felt like I was on fire. Sun and Hobson were massaging my forearms. I could feel the exhaustion in all my muscles and I was trying to catch my breath. I had never been that tired before after a match. I was paying the price for all the traveling, overtraining, and Cuba Libres. I only had a 10-minute break before that number 7 guy called me up again. I was exhausted. The plan of switching out my usual training of tire flips and stair sprints with drinks and surfing had done nothing good for my endurance. My next opponent was smaller than the Mongolian powerhouse who had just molested me for 8 minutes. He was pale, bald, and looked even more focused. My legs were shaking as I walked onto the mat. Combat, the referee said, and before I knew it, the little energetic chipmunk in front of me had pulled guard with lightning speed. I immediately knew that I didn't have the energy to keep up with his pace as I tried to step away from his legs, defending myself with the fury of a beginner tango class. I wanted to get him in my guard, but we pulled guard at the same time, and before I knew it, he had jumped up past and locked me in a tight side control. I tried to catch his bicep in order to do my escape, but he was too strong and too fast. It was too late to move anywhere, and I had to wait for him to make the next move. His arm crushed my face as I looked up in the ceiling and wondered what the architect had thought when he designed it. I listened to my breath and my heart beating. I was completely inside my own world, a place where time didn't seem to exist. I couldn't believe how much I had learned and grown from the trip. I felt vibrant and the world seemed so colorful. I had never been happier inside than I was at that moment. Snapping back to reality, I found myself in half guard with the opportunity to sweep. I got on top, but he was all over me, and before I knew it, he had tapped me out with a bow and arrow choke from the back. I couldn't care less. It seemed so infinitely unimportant whether I had won or lost that match. I wished my opponent good luck. He hadn't broken a sweat. His bald head was completely dry. I was tired in all my muscles and glad it was over. I high-fived Søren, Hobson, and Jonathan. That was it. It was over, and I was ready for the next adventure. We hung around for a few hours to see some of the matches. Johnny was in an 82-man purple belt division and won the gold for the third time. He got promoted to brown belt, which made me feel a little better after he had been tearing me apart that evening in Ryan Hall's gym. Rylan from Hawaii had drawn Marcelo Garcia in his first match and did a great job against him. I was excited to one day be a black belt and have the chance to compete against my own idols like that. Abraham, the gentle giant from the Dominican Republic, was competing at the opposite side of the bracket, as was his new arch-enemy, Alexander Trans from Denmark. They fought on two mats next to each other, each winning one match at a time. A pattern was showing. They didn't look at each other across the mats, knowing what was coming. They would be meeting again in the final. Alexander eventually won 2-0 by advantages, and Abraham was devastated. He had misread the scorecard and thought he was ahead, just waiting for the time to run out. I wrapped my belt around my gi and walked to the car in the parking lot with Søren. The tournament was over and everyone was leaving. All the other competitors had had their adventure for the weekend and were going back to their gyms and jobs the next day. I was going to Panama. Competing at the World Championships was officially crossed off the list. It felt good to have fulfilled the goal I'd set for myself at home before the trip. We were back in the garage gym in Chris's backyard by the evening. A handful of his friends and students who had competed at the tournament came by and everyone sat around on the mat and chatted. Music was on the stereo and there was a great vibe. Everyone was tired but happy. A handful of guys started rolling and Chris was joking around, still playing with jiu-jitsu after all these years like a kid who had just opened up the Christmas present he had wished for all year. The walls were oozing with history, filled with artifacts that could compete with any mad archaeologist's secret basement. He was an old-school jiu-jitsu guy, having started training in Horion's garage back in 1988 and becoming only the fifth American to receive a black belt. Sitting there, feeling the atmosphere and type of athletes that Chris had spawned from his own personality, I realized just how much he had inspired me in my own journey of jiu-jitsu. I hadn't really thought about it up until that point, but in my early years of training and watching his VHS tapes, I had adopted huge chunks of his philosophy on training, teaching, and life. The little garage gym looked exactly how I would imagine I would build one myself. In fact, it looked a lot like a smaller version of my gym at home. Without consciously knowing it, I had been thinking the same way as him. His ideas had become a part of me, and coming to his place so many years later, I saw how I had come full circle. I was in the very birthplace of my own jiu-jitsu. Chris was my teacher, but neither of us ever really knew it. I was unimaginably tired from the long day of competition, but the vibe in the little garage gym was great, and I hadn't rolled with Chris for many years. Last time was when I was a blue belt fanboy on one of my first trips alone in the big world. I borrowed one of the many gis hanging by the wall and clapped hands with him. His game was still really good, and his grip felt seasoned as he grabbed my pants by the knees and passed my guard. It was great to roll with him. People were laughing, joking, going hard and easy rounds, and singing along to the music. It felt like home, and I somehow found the energy to train for about 45 minutes the evening after competing in the World Championships. That guy would never know just how much influence he'd had on my life and everyone I trained at home. I was sleeping like a prince in the middle of the mat as the garage door opened with a loud noise. The sunshine hit me right in the face, and about 10 people wearing gis walked in loudly talking and laughing. It was about 9 a.m, and apparently there was a morning class about to begin. I tried to hide in my sleeping bag in the corner, but when the music started playing and people began rolling, I realized I might just as well wake up. Chris asked if I wanted to join in. I was totally wasted from the day before. At least 3 of my fingers were badly sprained from the Mongolian judo guy breaking my grips on his collar for 8 minutes. I would skip. Sun and I took Chris's lowrider bicycles for a ride along the beach in the beautiful weather. I wouldn't see him again until he would come to Denmark to spend Christmas with his family. It was a beautiful day. People were tanning on the beach and surfers were in the water. Strolling next to girls in hot pants on roller skates along the little concrete trail on the bicycles, it was the perfect American beach scene. I was sitting on a plastic chair in the garden that evening. There was no one home. The sun was just about to set and I had put on my hoodie to keep warm as the temperature slowly started to drop. It was quiet. There were no sounds of cars, just the wind in the trees of the little gardens around me. The air was fresh and clean. My body was sore. Every muscle and every joint hurt. My eyelids were heavy and I tried not to fall asleep. It would only be an hour before Chris came back to take me to the airport. A few hours later, I would be sitting in the plane on my way to Panama. I was going back to South America. Back to visit places I didn't know anything about, trying to communicate with people in a language I didn't speak. It seemed like too much for me. I couldn't find the energy to pick myself up and go on another adventure off the beaten path. That moment, all I felt like doing was going into the house, getting some food from the fridge, throwing myself on the couch and watching some stupid TV show. Learning another language, navigating through South American cities and airports, putting myself in difficult situations and having to approach strangers that probably didn't speak English was the last thing I wanted to do. Once again, it scared me how fast I had become accustomed to the easy, comfortable life in the US. Only a week away from adventure and it seemed too much. Of course, I was dead tired at that point, so everything seemed like it was too much. There was no way around it though. I decided that I had to pull myself together and stick to my promise of actively searching out the difficult and unknown. I could not allow myself to get too comfortable. Not before I got back home to Denmark, anyway. I went into the garage and packed my backpack. The next day would be a new day for me in a new place with new friends. Chris drove me to the airport. He talked about his book project, some kind of a Brazilian jiu-jitsu science fiction book set in a post-apocalyptic future where different species were fighting each other, just like the jiu-jitsu teams are fighting each other today. He was doing the artwork and was planning to have some of the big stars do some instructional material in it as well. It sounded like the craziest book I had ever heard of. But on the other hand, it wasn't really a surprise, as Chris was definitely the craziest jiu-jitsu guy I had ever known. He was like a mad scientist, often a bit confusing to try and understand, but now and then coming up with something completely amazing that blows everyone's minds. He told me stories about surfing with Hickson in Hawaii and getting lost in the streets of Copenhagen in the rock and roll 80s. There was no doubt that he had a lot of interesting stuff to put in that book.